Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, depending on where you're at in the world, when you see and or hear this, or what time of day it is when you press play. Welcome to episode number 4 of the Vulnerable Perspective Podcast. I am your host, Jared, and today, I'm just going to wing it. I have some content ideas of things that I want to go over in some future episodes, but I'm working to get some people to come onto the podcast with me that I can have some good discussion with, as well as some people to email me their stories and things that they might want to hear my perspective on. Not to say that my perspective is the only perspective or the right perspective, just that maybe I can provide some clarity and some different points of view that might be beneficial to them to get through some things that they are struggling with, whether it be within themselves, within intimate relationships, with friends, family, coworkers, significant others, whatever the case may be. Today, I wanted to go a little bit deeper into my intro. Talk a little bit more about who I am, what I've been through, and why I do what I do. And lately, I've been struggling more and more with some internal conflict. And in some reflecting moments going over it, there are things that I just really wanted to get out there. I want people to understand who I am. I'm not a shady person. I don't do things with malicious intent. Do I make mistakes? Yes. Do I make some decisions that I look back and I'm like, shit, I should have done that. That's not becoming of me. That is not my character. But unfortunately, in the moment, I made a poor decision. Yes. Do I regret it? At the end of the day, I don't regret much in life. I really don't. I'm a full-grown adult. I make decisions. I suffer the consequences of those decisions. It be what it be. If it costs me a relationship as a friend, a family member, or a significant other, it is what it is. That's for me to bear, right? I don't hold on to a lot of traumas. So I'll start with, I turned 41 this year. I'm a single father of 3 kids. Growing up, I didn't have the best household. My mom and my dad divorced when I was a year old. So as far back as I can remember, my dad was with my stepmom and my mom was with my stepdad. My mom and my stepdad never officially got married. In the state of Maine, they used to have a common law marriage. Just before that time frame would have come up, they abolished it. So even though he wasn't legally my stepfather, he was my stepfather. He taught me a lot of things, hunting and fishing, mechanics, working with my hands. My dad was more of a, you know, just spend time together, create videos and go to parks and stuff like that. And, you know, not so much the outdoorsy type in terms of like hunting and fishing, which is fine. You got to have all aspects, in my opinion, growing up. You want to have a bit of everything. So my dad, my stepmom was very much a, as I'd like to call it, a goody two shoes, right? She never did anything wrong. She's always very soft-spoken. She kept her emotions to herself quite often. You know, if she was upset, she definitely let you know. But she was very respectful about how she did a lot of things. And my dad, when I was younger, he was a lot better. Now that I'm older, not so much. He's definitely become more of a grumpy old man. He is an extreme left-leaning Democrat, which there's nothing wrong with being a Democrat or Republican. It is what it is, right? Whatever side you identify with, that's up to you. But he's so far left-leaning that if you don't agree with every little thing that he believes, then you're pretty much shit, in his opinion. He's disowned me 3 times. The third time is because he was talking down to me, and I gave it back to him, and he got upset and offended by it and said that I shouldn't talk to him like that because he's my dad. And at the same time, while there may be some truth in that, I'm also your son, and you shouldn't talk to me like that either, so equal energy pops. I still love my dad. I still wish the best for my dad, but he is not a part of my life, nor is he a part of my kids' lives. And what's sad is that he's not a part of my sister's life or my niece and my nephew's life either, just because of how stubborn he is. So, but growing up, he would come and get me every other weekend. I'd go to his house, you know, me and my sister growing up, to the point where, it got to the point where my sister stopped going. When she was like 15, 16 years old, she stopped going, 14, 15, 16, somewhere around there. And I would still go, you know, because I loved my dad, I loved my stepmom. And one of the things that was detrimental was that growing up, my mom and my dad used to shit on each other all the time. all the time. When I was with my mom, she would shit on my dad. When I was with my dad, he would shit on my mom. I don't remember my stepmom ever talking shit about my mom. And my stepdad never really, he was a strong silent type. He never really talked much to begin with. So I don't remember much words from him. So it was mainly just my mom and my dad. And my dad had a temper issue. Never like beat me or anything like that. But definitely had picked me up by the shirt, put me up against the wall. Like, not throwing me, but like held me up against the wall. Because of something I did. I asked for more food and I couldn't eat it all, and he got pissed off that it was a waste of food. Minor. So that's about the worst I remember my dad getting. My mom, me and her have an amazing relationship now. Growing up, it wasn't that great. She struggled a lot with work, with my stepdad, with fighting all the time, with drinking. My mom, I don't hold anything against my mom. And I'm pretty positive she knows this because I've told her. But she did the best she could with what she had. And I don't hate my mom for it. I love my mom. I wouldn't be here without her. She's been my best friend. Ever since I left the house and went and joined the military, she's been a huge cheerleader for me. And she's always been there for me. Sometimes probably a little too much. You know, looking back and reflecting on it, she's probably been there a little too often, a little too available to help me in moments that I need, where as an adult, I just need to figure it out for myself. I need to suffer for the decisions that I've made, the choices that I've made, and she's bailed me out more often than not. And at 40, almost 41 years old, that's a tough pill to swallow, right? Because when I was younger, looking at adults that are my age now, it's like, fuck, they got it all together. They got the money, they got the house, they got the cars, they get to go on trips, they get to do this, they get to do that. And I'm turning 41 and I'm like, fuck, I don't have any of that. Like, I've owned a home, I've owned my own vehicles, you know, I've leased a couple of the trucks. You know, I'm currently renting now because I can't afford to buy a house at the moment. No matter how much more money I make, I never seem to make enough to cover all the bills. It's been a major struggle. But, you know, but going back to it, she's definitely been my savior. And there was a point in, and I remember very vividly, in the fourth grade, guidance counselor came in, was asking questions of the classroom, and had us all put our hands up and started asking questions. And if the question didn't pertain to us, we put our hands down. And I'm not going to go over the list of the questions, but I will say that it kind of came back to like drugs and alcohol use in the household. And at the end of the questions, I was the only one that left my hand up. Now, when I say that, I don't believe that I was the only one that should have had my hand up. I am confident that other kids should have had their hands up. However, I was oblivious in the fourth grade. I was oblivious at 9, 10 years old, however old I was in the fourth grade. To putting my hand down and to not risk getting my mother in trouble. And so then the guidance counselor pulled me aside and had a conversation with me. And me being who I am is very open, very honest about things that goes on inside my household that maybe at the time I shouldn't have been. But at the same time, some of those situations are like, kids shouldn't have to go through this, right? There's a lot of things that kids and people in general shouldn't have to go through, but we fucking do. And a lot of the times, that type of shit is what makes us into the better human beings that we become, because of the trials and the tribulations, the adversities that we have to overcome, the challenges that we have to face. You know, we're kind of forced to look at a fork in the road and determine, do I want to go left and become bitter, or do I want to go right and become better? You know, and what's funny is that in the fourth grade, when this moment happened, because I remember it so vividly, this was the turning point in my life where I became very self-aware. I knew right at that point in time in my life, I did not want to be like my mom and I did not want to be like my dad. Now, I'm not shitting on my mom and my dad. In any way, shape, or form, am I shitting on my mom or my dad? Even though my dad and I do not have a relationship anymore, I still love and respect my dad and I still hope for the best for him. And with my mom, we have the best relationship that we could ever have at this point in time in my life with the shit that I went through growing up. So this isn't me shitting on her again. She did the best she could with what she had, you know, with the cards that she was dealt. Could she have done better? Sure, but she was not aware of doing better. She was just essentially existing and trying to survive. She was in that fight or flight mode pretty much her entire life. So I don't hate my mom for that. And I wouldn't expect anybody else to either. So, but I knew at that age that I wanted to be different. Nobody in my life, in my family, has been incredibly or wildly successful. And I don't mean just financially, monetarily. I just mean the overall aspects. My Uncle Jim was probably the closest, where he had a good job. He traveled. He got paid well. He had a loving family. He had a nice home. He was able to go on trips and make memories and stuff like that. And to me, living life and experiencing in life is success. Working every single day and struggling to get by and living paycheck to paycheck and not being able to afford to do basic things, even the fuel in your vehicle to go and just for a drive, you know, or, you know, because you're trying to budget it out, or, you know, to go to a park, you know, or to buy a couple of things that you can go on a picnic with your family or tenting, you know, camping, fishing, hunting, anything like that, right? Like, to go on a trip out of the country or to a different state, to an aquarium or to a Disney World or a Sea World or, you know, a Six Flags or whatever the case may be, like, that's not life. Working your life away is not life. Sacrificing your soul and your time to a job that doesn't give two shits whether you're there tomorrow or not. The only reason why they care if you're there is because they don't want to have to find somebody else to fill your seat, right? But aside from that, they don't give two shits about you. Like, that's not a life. I don't want to be a slave, right? So I knew at that age that I wanted to do something different. And becoming a teenager, getting into sports, you know, and then graduating high school, and I had an idea that I wanted to go to college and I wanted to be in carpentry because I loved finished carpentry. I love building stuff. I think being able to flip a home and stuff like that was something that I always wanted to do. And even to this day, it's still something that I wish I could have done. I wish I would have done. And that's probably one of the only few regrets that I really have, is that I didn't pursue that dream. Instead, I joined the military. 9/11 had happened. I was laying on a couch in my apartment. I shared an apartment with my cousin Shauna, and I had just gotten home from working an overnight shift stocking shelves at Walmart. And so the morning of 9/11, some of the terrorists that had gone through Canada into Maine, down into Boston to hit the plane, stopped in my hometown, Lincoln, Maine. Stopped at the gas station that I frequent almost every day to get a drink and some fuel. And I wake up to a phone call from my aunt, and she's like, "Jared, turn on the TV." I turn on the TV, and I see, no matter what channel it's on, I see a plane going into a building. I ask her, I'm like, "What movie is this?" And she's like, "That's not a movie, that's real life. Terrorists just attacked the United States." And I'm like, "What?" Like, I'm in disbelief. I don't believe this. This is not happening. And then I watch the other plane hit and realize that we're going to war. And in high school, before I graduated, I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I had signed up for the Marines, and I signed up in the delayed entry program, and I was going as a battle buddy with my buddy Matt. He wanted to do something as well, and he wanted to join, so we went as the battle buddy program, which means we kind of go in together, we train together, you know, and we do a similar MOS together, military occupational specialty, together, right? And in the process of going through and graduating and going down to the MEP station in Portland, Maine to swear in for the final time, I was supposed to fly out on 9/11. I was supposed to bus from Portland down to Boston and fly out of Boston. Hindsight 2020, I'm glad I didn't. I'm not saying that I would have been on that plane, but the idea that I was supposed to fly out on the same day is kind of scary to think about. But when I went down, it was July or August of that summer of 2001, I had gone to the MEP station to swear in for the final time, and all my paperwork had changed. It was different than what I had originally signed up for. I had signed up for a mechanic. That's what me and him were going to go in as, were mechanics. And when I got down there to swear in, they had redone all my paperwork and changed it to infantry. That's not what I signed up for. That's not what I told my recruiter I wanted. He promised me I'd go in as a mechanic. Well, when I got there, they were like, no, everybody goes in infantry. You know, do 4 years as infantry, and then you can switch to a mechanic. And I said, no, I'm not in. They're like, well, you already swore in. Like, I swore in once, which was not even an official swear-in. I was still in high school when it happened. I hadn't graduated yet. I'm not going in. So I ended up getting out of that, and that's a lengthy story in and of itself of the things that they said, the messages that they left. But that's, I digress. I'll go down that road a different time. So fast forward, 9/11 had happened, and I go to work the next night, and my boss pulls us all aside and was like, listen, if anybody's affected by this, if you need to go home, if you need to take time, like this is a major event, by all means, please do so. And I found out in that moment that my Uncle Jim, his daughter Sunshine, was a stewardess, flight attendant, and she was unavailable. Nobody could find her. We didn't know what was going on. Come to find out, she was on a vacation, and her phone was put away, so nobody could get a hold of her, which is great. But it was still scary for 2 weeks that nobody could get a hold of her. Not even her parents knew where she was or what was going on, but she was an adult. She doesn't need to tell everybody what's going on in her life, and we didn't have social media back then to blast that all over for everybody to know about it. So I went on a ride with my mom, and in that time frame, again, me and my mom's relationship had gotten a lot better through high school and after graduating. So we go on a long ride. We're an hour and a half, minimum, hour and a half ride. And I tell her, I'm like, Mom, I got to do something. I've got to do something different. I don't want to stock shelves for Walmart. I don't really know what I want to do with my life, but I know I want to make a difference. And I think joining the military is going to be it. But I don't want to join the Marines because they lied to me once. I'm going to go check out the Army. You know, and if it's not the Army, then maybe I'll check out the Air Force or the Navy. So after that hour and a half plus ride with my mother, I walk into the Army recruiting station. And funny story, before I walked in, like where they were at, you walk down a hallway, you walk down a hallway, and you have the different offices, recruiting station, left and right, in this office space. And on the right was the Marines, directly across the hallway. And the hallway was not very wide, barely wide enough for two people, right? But right across was the Army. So I stop and I turn into the Marines, and I saw my recruiter, the one that I initially started signing up with for the Marines. And he looks at me, and you can see him, he gets all kinds of upset because I didn't join. And I'm like, oh, this is where all the lying bitches are. And he's like, what'd you just say? And I turn, and I just walk a couple steps across the hallway. I walk into the Army recruiting office, and there was a short guy, right? He was Special Forces. He was a recruiter now. His name was Sergeant T2. And the Marine recruiter is like storming through his office across the hall right behind me. And I walk towards Sergeant T2, and he stands up. He walks right by me, right? Doesn't even acknowledge me. Just walks right past me, stops the Marine recruiter dead in his tracks, like Heisman Trophy, like stiff arms him. He's like, what are you doing? Like, did you just hear what that guy just called us? And he's like, it doesn't really matter. He's with the Army now. Get the fuck out of my office, right? And I literally looked at him and I said, you are my recruiter. You're the one I want to work with. So I sat down with him. I told him everything that had happened with the Marines. And he promised me, he's like, listen, there's sign-on bonuses if you go infantry. There's sign-on bonuses if you do some other MOSs. How'd you do on your ASVAB? And I'm like, I did pretty good. And he looked at my ASVAB scores. And I had gotten just high enough to do everything except for like counterintelligence. So I was a few points. And I could be wrong my numbers, but for some reason I was thinking it was like a 112 was the score I got, and you needed like a 114, or I got 110, you needed a 112, something like that. I scored very well overall on my ASVAB, and which made me feel pretty good about myself. So I told him, I was like, nah, I want to be a mechanic. My stepdad was teaching me mechanics. I enjoy working on vehicles. Unbeknownst to me, I just enjoy working on them as a hobby, not so much as a job. So I end up going in. I do my reception down at Fort Jackson in South Carolina. I do my basic at Fort Jackson in South Carolina. And I did my AIT, which is your advanced individual training. which essentially is your training for your MOS, your military occupational specialty. So I did all my training right there at Fort Jackson, and I came home for a couple of weeks, and came home extended because I was trying to do like a little bit longer at home. At home with recruiting, like they offered me the chance to stay home for an extra week if I did some hometown recruiting, right? So if I tried going to the school, if I tried getting people to sign up, and I had to give them a list of names, and I might have stayed home for like an extra 2 weeks. So I think I was home for 2 weeks, and I was staying home for an extra 2 weeks. I can't remember how long it was, but it was an extra long period of time that I was home, and then I was going to the high school, and I was talking to other students, and I was trying to get people to sign up and get names and all this stuff, and I didn't really want to do it. So I just made, and even my recruiter was like, listen, Jared, just grab some names and throw it in. Don't worry about it. Just get names and phone numbers. You know, if you get a list of people that are willing to at least have their name on the list, just turn that in, right? And then don't worry about the rest. Like, it's not a big deal. So I don't think anybody signed up because I talked to anybody. My buddy Danny did sign up, but it was after I was in. But I don't think it was because I told him. I did give his name and number, but I don't think it was that. My buddy Tom did as well, but he joined a couple years later. So my duty station was at Fort Carson in Colorado Springs. I was assigned to a military police unit, 984th MP. One of the things that I don't openly talk about and that I will, because I want to be vulnerable, I want to be authentic and I want to be real, and I want to be honest. I signed up for 4 years. I did not make it the full four. So being 18 years old, because I turned 18 in the summer of 2001, I turned 18 years old. So I flew out to basic November 26th of 2001, and I was stationed at Fort Carson in the beginning of 2002. And I had made it into 2003 before I got out. So I did not even a full 2 years. And it sucks that I can't proudly say that I served my 4 years. I'm still considered a veteran. I don't tout it like my friends and family that have gone overseas and have sacrificed their lives. I was willing to, however, I didn't, right? So that's one of the things where I look back and while I wouldn't have my kids if anything was different, and I don't regret that, I am where I am because of the decisions I made, and I have my children, and they are absolutely the best part of my life and myself. So I don't wish I could go back and redo it, because then I probably would never met my ex-wife, and I never would have my kids. And even if my life would be quote-unquote better then, I wouldn't want it because I wouldn't have them, and they are the best part of me. So it just sucks that, again, I can't proudly look back and say, yeah, I did this, I served 4 years, or I stayed longer, or whatever the case may be. But some things happened while I was in. My uncle, who was one of my best friends, my mother's brother, passed away. I lost my virginity while I was in, and I got dropped like a bad habit by this person, and it tore me apart, and it caused me to spiral. I was, you know, over 1,000 miles away from friends and family. I had some friends there, but they weren't really the type of friends that you would want. I hung around with a lot of the bad crowd while I was there. And what's funny is that a majority of the people on and off post were really part of the bad crowd. I did make some good friends that are some very good people, but they were just very few and far in between, such is life. So I got out 2003, came home, worked, had no direction, had no goals, was just trying to make some money and just trying to get by, just trying to pay bills. Wasn't really trying to upgrade my life. And then 2007 had happened, and I wasn't feeling too good. I was helping a buddy of mine who was a DJ. He still is to this day. He's been doing it for many, many, many years. He's a very good family friend. And he asked if I'd come help him and do this benefit dance. And I'd had a massive splitting headache migraine, and I was like, you know what, I want to get out of the house, I don't want to suffer, so fuck it, I'll take some Excedrin and I'll go. So I go, and I'm helping him DJ. We're at this little place, a lot of people dancing, hooting, hollering, having a good time, BYOB. And I saw this woman dancing on the floor, and I remember looking at her, and I'm a guy, so don't hold it against me, or do, that's fine. But she was a very good-looking blonde, and she had a very large chest, and a lot of cleavage was showing, and it caught my attention. And, like, I was just like, wow. Like, god dang. How are you doing, and will you please mess up my life? Unfortunately, she did. that's part of the story. But at the time, you know, obviously I didn't know who she was. A bunch of my friends and family knew who she was. My buddy, who was a DJ, knows who she was. So I ended up getting introduced to her. We exchanged numbers, and we start talking, and the rest is history, essentially, at that point in time. We got together. She left her boyfriend at the time. For me, she got pregnant with my oldest in 2007, the end of 2007. Our relationship was very rocky. We had a lot of stupid fights, things that didn't make sense. I'm not going to sit here and say that I didn't initiate any fights, because I most definitely did unintentionally. But a lot of times she initiated fights because she's used to that in her life. She's used to fighting. She's used to arguing. That's kind of her norm. And unfortunately, a lot of people that go through that in their life, if they don't have that, it feels weird and awkward and uncomfortable for them, and they don't like it. So therefore, they start a fight because that feels normal to them. And that happened a lot. There were times that I asked questions or I would say something, and I knew it wasn't the right time, wasn't the right place, but I had to get it off my chest. I just had to get it off my chest. So I would say something, and it would spark a fight. It would spark an argument. And truth be told, it wouldn't have mattered what day, what time, how I would have said it. Speaking about my feelings and how I think about something that happened or that was said to me would have sparked the fight no matter what. And over the years, we ended up having two more kids. We were together for 10 years total. After 5 years, I proposed. I'd bought a house. I proposed. We got married right before our youngest was born in 2013. He was born in October. And that was just because we had bought the dress. We had planned a September wedding. But with her being pregnant, we knew she wasn't going to fit in the wedding dress, and we didn't want to pay to have it, you know, altered. So we had a bum rush wedding at a gazebo in February of 2013. And it was cold. It was very cold. We had a handful of people there. Last minute, we went to the local restaurant to do our reception, so to speak. A friend of ours baked the cake. A wedding cake for us, you know, and, you know, we made do. We went out that night, we drank at the local pool hall / sports bar, and her mom was there, and I remember this very well. Her mom got drunk, like very drunk, and I had rented a van from work, from the dealership I worked at, and her mom was so drunk that she couldn't stand up. So I had helped her mom get into the van. We brought her to her home. I couldn't get her out of the van easily. Like, she was stumbling and falling. Like, she literally could not stand up. It was that bad. So I hoisted her up over my shoulder, and I carried her into her place. I set her down in a bed, and I covered her up. You know, we made sure she was okay. You know, put a waste basket next to her bed in case she had to throw up. We made sure that, you know, she didn't have her shoes on, you know, and that she was comfortable. And we put, I think, a bottle of water. We didn't want to put a cup in case she knocked it over. I'm pretty sure we put a bottle of water next to her bed so she'd have something to drink. And all I can remember is the very next day, her mom called her bitching and complaining that I was in trouble because I bruised her ribs and I needed to pay for it. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, you got wasted at our, like, reception / going out after hours to drink and celebrate our wedding. And you got so stumbling drunk that I had to literally carry you into your place and put you into your bed. And all you can complain about is that your ribs were a little bruised, because I literally had to hoist you up over my shoulder because you were so much like a jellyfish, I couldn't carry you in my arms. Like a full-grown female adult that I couldn't pick up because she was literally just flopping all over the place. I had to toss her up over my shoulders, and I didn't do it rough. You know, and did I feel bad that I had bruised her ribs? Yeah, but to say that I was going to be in trouble and that I was going to have to pay for the doctor's visits and all this stuff, like, the fuck? But that was the type of shit that I had to deal with. So, fast forward, you know, we moved around a lot. And a lot of it was me searching for a better opportunity to provide and build a future for myself, my wife, and my kids. I wanted to provide that stable, structured home. And I also struggle working for companies where my morals are challenged, my integrity is challenged, where, like, in the car business, like, you see a lot of toxic stuff, a lot of illegal stuff that happens. And I don't want to be a part of that. And I don't want to recommend and refer a business for people to do business at when I know that they do shady dealings, when I know that they play games with numbers to find ways to make profit off people without just being upfront and honest, without selling on value, which is what I did when I sold cars. And that was the experience that I promised people when I would set up appointments for them to come in and buy cars with other salespeople. When I was in management, like, listen, come in, this is what we're going to do, this is how I'm going to take care of you, I'll be upfront and honest with the numbers, I'll show you what your vehicle is worth, I'll show you what I'll sell my car for, and if it works, great, and if it does, no harm, no foul, we'll pass on as friends. Not a big deal. Sell on value. Dealerships don't like to do that. Some still do. Some do. And it's becoming more and more prevalent that they do that because of the internet, because people talk, right? But unfortunately, some dealerships still play games, and they still are shady, and they still try to hide numbers and find ways to make profit in ways that they shouldn't. Like, just, it just sucks. So I couldn't support that. So I moved around a lot. And part of it was also she wanted small town living. Everywhere we went, she wasn't willing to drive because she didn't like traffic. And I get it, having that phobia of being around a lot of cars. She's witnessed people getting into accidents. She's been in accidents just as I have. And it is a scary situation. I don't let it stop me because I know I need to drive to get to where I need to go. And I'd rather be in control. So I just deal with it. Unfortunately, she kind of shuts down. So we moved back to our hometown area. She said that she wants to be with friends and family, but then she would always be home and she would never go anywhere. So it's like, okay, so I'm struggling to find a job to pay in our hometown area because nobody likes to pay in this area. So we need to move so I can afford to provide a home for us and food on the table, the bills paid, and vehicles to drive. And eventually, like, we want to be able to go on trips and vacations and stuff like that. And we do that by getting away from a suffocating area, right? From an area that literally has no jobs, and the jobs that they do have barely want to pay minimum wage. And minimum wage is not going to support a household of five. So we moved again. You know, we moved a lot of times. In the 10 years that we're together, we moved a lot. And I wish that we hadn't. I wish that when I bought the house that I bought back in 2012, right when I proposed, we had just stayed there. But some things happened. I caught her talking to another guy while we were together before we got married. Right after we got married, I'd asked for a divorce because of how she was treating me. And then during that time frame that we were separated while still living together, I was talking to somebody else. And she found out about that. And I was like, let's just start fresh. Let's sell the house and move to Florida. And we did. That didn't solve any problems. Physical geographical location did not solve any problems. It just made things worse. So, did a lot of back and forth. We finally moved home, then moved to New Hampshire, and then moved home again. And then when we moved home the last time is when she asked for the divorce. She asked, not me. I struggled with it. I fought severe depression and suicidal ideation, driving very fast and looking to veer off the road into a guardrail, into a tree, into a river. There was one time I was at work and I had decided that my life wasn't worth living. So I walked out to my vehicle and I had a knife in the car. So I grabbed the knife and I walked out and just beyond the tree line into the woods. And I didn't even think about it, but in the moment, my thought was just, I was just going to walk out. I was going to get down on my knees and say a little prayer, and then I was just going to be done. And as I walked out into the tree line, a friend called me. And I wasn't going to answer it, but he called. So I pulled the phone out, and I saw that it was him. And it was weird because, like, he was a vendor friend of mine, like, from in the car business. He worked for Edmunds.com, and I worked at a dealership in New Hampshire, and that's how I met him. And I answered the phone, and I'm like, "Hey, what's going on, man?" And he's like, "Brother, I don't know what's going on, but I had this very bad feeling that something bad was about to happen, and I had to call you." And he's like, "I don't know what's going through your mind. I don't know what you're doing right now, but I can tell you that I've been there. I put a gun in my mouth, I pulled the trigger, and it jammed. And I pulled the bullet out, and the firing pin had hit dead point, but the bullet didn't fire." And he's like, "I still have that bullet to this day because now I'm in a happy, committed marriage. My kids are happy, in a great job, and life is going so much better for me. But it wouldn't have been had that bullet gone off like it should have. And again, I don't know where you're at right now, but I know that you just need to make it through today. Just one more day, Jared, just one more day." And I fell to my knees crying, because as much as I didn't want to live, I didn't want to die. The idea of not seeing my kids, to not being here, scared me. But at the same time, it was the idea that my kids would live a life without me and wondering why I was no longer here, wondering, what did I do to deserve my father to kill himself? Why would he do that? Why would he leave me? So I cried a lot. And I decided that no matter how bad my life feels, that I need to shoulder that pain and that agony and that weight, because my kids don't deserve to carry any of it. They didn't ask to come into this world. They didn't ask to go through the things that they've gone through. And I wish I could take it all away and we could be a happy family. Unfortunately, that's not an option. So this is one of the things that I've learned, is that I can't control anybody else. I can't sit and dwell on how people should act and should treat others and should treat me. No matter how much it baffles me, no matter how much I rack my brain, it's not my place to figure out why the fuck people want to be so shitty, why they want to be so malicious and vindictive, or what I did to cause them to hate me so much. The only thing I can do is to keep working on being the best version of me and trying to be there for my kids. And I'm going to say that I fall short of that every single day. I get distracted. I've struggled. I've tried dating since then. We separated in 2017. We divorced in 2018. She had the kids up until last year. I've attempted to date, and I've allowed very toxic women into my life because I still hadn't healed. I still hadn't set my boundaries of what I was willing to accept and not accept in my life, like I talk about. And when you listen to me talk, if it's in a TikTok video, in a live, or on these podcasts, a lot of what I'm talking about is stuff that I've been through and had to learn the hard way from, or experiences that I've witnessed of other people that I've been a part of, where it's like, I want to share this knowledge because I don't want you to have to go through the same pain that I've been through before you learn and understand that this is not how life is meant to be. Life is meant to be happy and loving and filled with memories and experiences. It's not meant to slave away at a job. It's not meant to be droned out on medications, high on drugs, down on alcohol, boozing away. Like, that's not life. Life is finding your people, building that family. They don't have to be blood related. And that's what I'm working towards, building a brand, trying to connect with like-minded people, and trying to do something where I can impact as many people in a positive way as I possibly can. In this time frame, I came up with a business idea. It was called Remember Your, and then instead of .com, it was .life, so Remember Your Life, where I wanted people to have the ability to go and record messages for their loved ones for when they passed on. Because my mother had gone through a surgery, her knee replacement, and for a year it was bad. Like, she had infection and her leg was a little bit longer than the other one because of the surgery, and she was having hip problems. She worked in a hospital, so she was always on her feet, and she lost a lot of weight, and she was looking very stressed and disheveled, and she wasn't sleeping very good, and she's a stubborn mule. And so she was always working and always doing things and dropping everything for everybody else and never taking care of herself, because that's how she feels good about herself, is by filling the hole in her heart where my stepfather passed away. And that's another story that I bypassed for now. She fills it by loving on other people, distracting herself from that hole that she has in her heart. And I was afraid that she was going to pass. And knowing that our relationship had gotten so much better, I was going to be very, very, very upset. And I was going to be in a very dark place. When that day comes, it's going to suck to not have my mom. So I'd asked my mom, I said, "Mom, I'm not saying that you're going to die anytime soon. I don't want you to die anytime soon, but I need you to do me a favor. I need you to record a video for me telling me that you love me and that you're proud of me," or whatever you want to say. Just whatever. "But when that day comes that you die and then you're no longer here and I can no longer call you or come and see you, I need the ability to watch this video to pull me out of that dark place that I'm going to be in, where I know that you're there. Even if you're physically not here, but in spirit, in my heart, in my mind, you are here. And you're looking over my shoulder and you're there to protect me and to help guide me." And she said, why do you need that, Jared? Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm fine. I just know that this is going to be bad. I'm probably going to break some stuff and people aren't going to want to be near me when that day comes." So she said, "Okay, I can do that." And shortly after that, I was driving to work. I had a 2-hour commute. This is before we moved back to Maine the last time. And on the way, Lucas Graham came on. And it was a song called "You're Not There" that he had made for his father, who had passed away in 2012. This was in 2017, mind you. And in the song, the lyrics, he talks about, you know, he's up on stage and looking out in the crowd. And he feels like he can see his dad out in the crowd, but he's starting to forget what he looks like and sounds like. And I thought about my stepfather. My stepfather, Harold, passed away in 97. And I remember what he looks like. And most importantly, I remember what he looks like from a little wallet photo that I have of me and him when he bought a car back in like 94, 95. And us standing in front of the dealership in front of the car. I don't have that picture anymore, unfortunately, but I remember it very well. I don't remember what he sounds like. I don't remember his voice. That bothers me more than I care to admit. My grandfather passed away back a few years ago, and because of all of this, I did record an interview with him, because he was going in for surgery to have a tumor removed from his nose. We weren't sure if he was going to make it because he was in his 80s. So I did an interview with him, asked him a bunch of questions about himself. And I look back on that frequently because he's very much a man that I want to be like. My grandfather and my stepdad. You know, and in hearing that song, it made me think that everybody should have that ability to go back and listen to the voice and see the face and the mannerisms of those that they love and that care about that are no longer with us, to help pull them through those dark moments in life where they wish they could just call one more time and hear them and talk to them. Tell them that they love them and hear it back. So I had that idea, and part of this with the vulnerable perspective and communicating and the impact positive and the brand, the merchandise, it's all geared towards that. It's all geared towards building a bridge between people where we can communicate better, more maturely and respectfully, and we can realize that we have far more in common than we do differences, but that we can celebrate the differences still and use that as our uniqueness, but to know that we are still human, we are still people. We are not a religion, we are not a nationality, we are not a race, we are people. We all bleed the same, we all breathe the same, regardless of what you believe in or what color of your skin is, you're a human being, and we deserve to love and respect one another regardless. That's the reason why I started all of this, because I want us to have those conversations. And I know I'm rambling, and this is going to be a super long podcast, and I apologize for those that listen. And if you get emotional, I apologize. Or if you think that I'm just droning out and rambling on and it's too long to listen to, I apologize for that too. But I just wanted to give a little bit more of an insight to me, to who I am. I'm just a guy that just wants to build a better life, that wants to see the quality of life improve for myself, my kids, and everybody else. That we don't want to slave away, that we don't want to struggle financially, that we all deserve experiences and to be able to travel. But I'll end it here.